From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a very active day here in Washington, D.C., several hearings on Capitol Hill. Attorney General William Barr appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee and pushed back when he was grilled over a letter by Special Counsel Robert Mueller saying he disagreed with the AG's characterization of his report.
Well, as I said, I talked directly to Bob Mueller about his letter to me and specifically asked him, what exactly are your concerns? Are you saying that the March 24th letter was misleading or inaccurate or what? He indicated that it was not. He was not saying that.
We'll talk about that along with a number of hearings on dangerous bills, one being the so-called Equality Act, which was in committee today. We'll also get an update from a hearing yesterday on an attempt to resurrect the Equal Rights Amendment. Yeah, that goes back a long way. Congressman Greg Stube of Florida, member of the House Judiciary Committee, joins us for that conversation. Also, one of the countries contained in the Commission on International Religious Freedom's annual report that was released on Monday was Egypt. While there are positive developments on the religious liberty front in Egypt, problems remain, especially in the rural areas of the country where anti-Christian mob violence occurs with impunity and regularity. Also, the administration today saying they're moving toward designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization, something that is Egyptian officials have been calling for. Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, a co-chair of the Egypt caucus, is here on those topics. And a major victory for the unborn in North Carolina as the state senate overrode a gubernatorial veto last night on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. One of the bill's key sponsors, State Senator Joyce Krawczyk, is here with the latest a little bit later on Washington Watch. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls, I hope to, a little later here on Washington Watch. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Before we go to our first guest, I just want to remind you that I'd like to invite you to join my wife and I and a number of the FRC team on a cruise to Alaska this summer, July the 7th through the 14th. We'll have General Jerry Boykin will be along for the ride, the cruise, along with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and former Ambassador Ken Blackwell will be on the trip. Not only will you be able to take in just God's majesty, majestic creation, it's just amazing, but also behind-the-scenes look at what's happening in Washington, D.C., with some of those people on the front lines getting it done. So find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can be a part of that. All right, on Monday, as we've talked about, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its annual report on religious freedom around the world. Now, it focuses on some of those countries that are the most egregious in violating religious freedom. One of the countries that has been on a watch list is the country of Egypt. Now, the report makes very clear that they're making progress in terms of moving toward greater religious freedom in that country, and a large part of that is because of the leadership of President El-Sisi. Well, joining me now to discuss this and other aspects of Egypt is Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, who represents Nebraska's 1st District. He is a member of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on State and Foreign Operations and is the founder and co-chair of the Egypt Caucus. And he also just authored a piece that was in the Hill.com yesterday entitled Egypt, Our Forgotten Friend. Congressman Fortenberry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me on the program. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Appreciate your perspective and what you do as well.
Well, thank you. And, you know, you and I have spoken a number of times about Egypt. You actually spent some time there growing up in Egypt, and you've gone back and spent time there with the current president and other officials there. There's reason for promise with Egypt, but they still have some challenges ahead of them.
Well, I think that's a fair characterization. One of the dynamics in Washington is that we tend to be very, very hard on friends. And this is why I authored that piece on Egypt called The Forgotten Friend. And thank you for mentioning it, by the way. And it's on my website if anybody wants to go deeper into the issue. The reality is, for instance, there has been a 40-year-old peace treaty between Israel and Egypt that was gained through great sacrifice by the leaders of both of those countries. In fact, the president of Egypt, Anwar Sadat, gave his life.
Right.
He was assassinated because of this peace treaty. By the Muslim Brotherhood. Egypt and Israel had fought four wars since 1948, the last one being 1973. And in fact, when I was a young man, I entered the Sinai Desert in that space where the 73 war was fought, and I saw the hand-painted sign that said, here was the war, here is the peace. And it was one of the early formative moments for me as a young person that I think instilled in me the ideals of possibility that are gained through sacrificial leadership. And so I tend to see Egypt in this lens. It's not to in any way diminish the problems that they have, the human rights issues, the nature of governance, and the protection of religious minorities. However, Egypt could have completely collapsed just a few short years ago after there were uprisings in the street. We had the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood President Morsi, and then the destabilization that took place. You think we have problems now in the Middle East? It's unimaginable what it would have happened if Egypt, the largest Arab country in the Middle East, would have collapsed in the chaos. And unimaginable. So you have a military person take power who now has since been duly elected, named President Sisi. In one of his very first acts, he brought the Coptic Christian Pope, Pope Tewodros, and the Grand Imam from Al-Aqsa University at the Grand Mosque. And he put them both on television next to him and said, we are Egyptians. This is a very, very powerful thing to do, because what he did, which is almost unheard of in the Middle East, is transcend sectoral differences.
Right.
And say, this is who we are. We are a healthy nation of Egyptians. And so this is, again, what we're trying to achieve throughout the Middle East, and yet we constantly poke Egypt in the eye because of, yes, considered problems. But we don't hold that hand of friendship very tightly. And my perspective is we need to be in authentic dialogue and friendship with this very strong ally who has held the peace with Israel at great sacrifice, who is in a transition period of stabilization. And by the way, 88% of the people in Egypt recently voted in the referendum to allow for the extension of the president's term. That's a very significant majority of people saying we need to choose security at this moment and stability in the institution of the presidency. So it's important that we do human rights and religious watch considerations and evaluations. It forces our friends to be attentive to these issues. But in terms of religious freedom and the protection of minority rights, there's a ways to go in Egypt. However, there are substantial protections in place. So the idea here is to affirm what is good and keep working toward what is better.
It's in a very important country. You know, Egypt, the largest, 100 million people, they have the ability to influence a large portion of both Africa and the Middle East. So it's a very key ally. So you're absolutely correct. And I think the leadership, it's clear. I've been to Cairo. I was actually there for the opening of the cathedral, and was, in fact, talked to the president briefly, President El-Sisi, at that opening. And I was amazed at how he is trying to use his influence to change the culture, to allow for greater religious freedom. The challenge is, and this is what we found in our report, or stated in our report, is that while, you know, in Cairo there's we see very positive things. When you get out to the rural portions of Egypt, there is major problems as it pertains to religious freedom, as there's anti-Christian mob violence in Upper Egypt. But there's certainly a country that we should be welcoming in and not pushing away, no question about it.
Yeah, you're correct to point out in Upper Egypt, particularly in the area of Minya. We have reports as well of violence against Christians, very real passivity on the part of government in terms of prosecuting those who are guilty of violence against Christians. I recently sent a letter to the Coptic bishop in the area to continue to give him encouragement. In fact, I raised this very point with the foreign minister, who was sitting in my office just a couple of weeks ago, right in front of, in a chair, which is right in front of me right now as I'm talking to you, along with several other key points of tension in the relationship. But the only reason that I can do that is because I'm trying to hold the hand of friendship even tighter. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong military-to-military relationship. As I said, Egypt has held the peace. They are fighting their brand of ISIS in the Sinai Desert. They've got problems along the Libyan border. They're going to great lengths to try to secure that border so terrorist influences don't come from there. They've got problems to the south with Sudan. They're actually entering into an energy agreement with the Israelis. No one knows about any of this stuff. Their robust relationship, security relationship with Israel is real. And yet we'll critique this and that, appropriately so. But in order to have legitimacy, we have to be in authentic dialogue and authentic friendship. And this has been my point of founding the Egyptian Caucus, of trying to leverage my experience as a younger person to try to elevate consciousness about the importance of this ally and to give them the encouragement and sometimes the necessary critique to make changes that are consistent with justice, human rights, human dignity, so their society can flourish even better.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us, Congressman Fortenberry, Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska, my guest, is discussing Egypt, an important ally, emerging after a very turbulent time. You know, the White House today confirming that the Trump administration moving toward designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. Now, there have been some advocating for that for quite some time, including, and I'm sure this came up in your meetings with President Sisi, they would like to see the Muslim Brotherhood identified as a terrorist organization. What effect might this have on the stability in Egypt?
Well, it's my understanding that was a direct request of President Sisi to President Trump when they met here. I didn't have a chance this time to dialogue directly with President Sisi, although I was in a room with him in another format and presentation. There is an important set of distinctions here. The Muslim Brotherhood, yes, there's been conversation for a very long time about designating the Egyptian branch of Muslim Brotherhood as terrorist organization, and obviously the administration has moved in that direction. There are other countries, though, that caution us about such moves, such as the country of Jordan, which has Muslim Brotherhood representatives
right
in their own parliament, and so there's a different type of relationship there. So I think it's important to narrow this place to place rather than just think of it in terms of an umbrella designation.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they have a presence in many different countries, and you're right, different countries view it in a different way, although there is even some questionable view of them in Jordan. It's just they play kind of a different role.
Yes.
Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. Jeff, great to talk with you again, and we'll encourage people to read your piece. We've got a link to it on our website.
Pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Jeff Fortenberry from Nebraska. You can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about a bill called the Equality Act. It's not so equal. Some people are more equal than others in this bill. Greg Stube, Florida congressman, joins me. He's just stepping out of the Judiciary Committee where the hearing was taking place. We're going to talk about that. Also, I'll give you an update on a hearing on the Equal Rights Amendment. It's back. They're trying to resurrect it. What all does it include? More than you might think. That's coming up here on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you. In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Congressman Greg Stube of Florida. We're talking about the Equality Act. It was in committee. Actually, they called votes, and so he's voting right now, so he's going to join us in a moment. However, I want to go to another bill. The Democrats pushing a lot of bad stuff. Yesterday, there was in a subcommittee. In the Judiciary Committee, there was a markup, or I'm sorry, a hearing on the Equal Rights Amendment. You think, well, I've heard that before. Yeah, about 30 years ago. Well, they're bringing it back, and they're trying to push this again. And I want to show you how far-reaching it is. Mike Johnson, congressman from Shreveport, on the program a lot, chairman of the Republican Study Committee. He asked about the ERA and its application to the sexual orientation and gender identity in terms of what does sex mean in ERA. I want you to hear this clip, short clip, and then we're going to go, I think we've got Congressman Stube, and we're going to go to the Equal Rights, or we're going to go to the Equality Act. But first, here's Congressman Mike Johnson yesterday in a subcommittee hearing on the Equal Rights Amendment.
Some people are arguing in the Supreme Court this term, as we all know, that the word sex in the federal civil rights laws includes self-professed gender identity. Is it your understanding that the term sex in the ERA also includes self-professed gender identity? If so, or if not, why is that?
The ERA will prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex. If there's discrimination on the basis of sex in the treatment of gay or lesbian or transgender people, then that will count as unconstitutional under the ERA, just as the Supreme Court is about to decide whether it counts as unconstitutional under the Equal Protection Clause.
That, by the way, was an attorney, Kathleen Sullivan. She's a former law professor as well, who was a witness for the Democratic Party on this, the Democratic majority. So, as you see, ERA, not just about women. It's about redefining sex. And all that means. All right, we're going to switch now to the Equality Act, something we've been talking about. There was a markup on that today. The Democrats introduced this last month. It, on surface, you know, it sounds good. We've talked about this before, how they choose these names that sound so good, but they're so deceptive. There are some serious problems with the Equality Act. The central problem with the Equality Act is that it nullifies the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which protects religious liberty in all the areas that the Equality Act touches, and it touches a lot. Here to talk about this, Congressman Greg Stube, who represents the 17th District of Florida and serves on the Judiciary Committee, the Oversight and Reform Committee, and the Veterans Affairs Committee, and was in the hearing today. Congressman Stube, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This, you know, sounds good, Equality Act. Everybody wants equality. But that's really not what this is about. Some people are more equal than others under this bill.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing when you first start to read the definition section, it actually changes the word women or woman to be any person. I mean, it's just I just filed an amendment as it related to female athletes and females competing in female athletic events and not allowing biological males who, quote unquote, identify as a female to compete against women in women athletic events. On April 29th, Martina Navratilova, Professor Coleman, and the Washington Post did an opinion article supporting the very amendment that I filed, and it was, you know, knocked down on party lines in the committee. It's just interesting to me that it's actually going against the very fabric of women and their diversity and their being able to compete in their own athletic events, and now men who say they identify as a woman are going to be able to compete in these events with against women.
It's interesting you bring up that aspect because there's a lot of pushback on that. In fact, it's been interesting to see the opposition that has kind of come together against this feminist for the very reasons that you were articulating, that this is anti-woman in many, many ways. In addition to that, as I mentioned, it's anti-religious freedom. Kristen Wagner, Senior Vice President of Alliance Defending Freedom, said the Equality Act would undermine, quote, the fundamental freedoms of speech, religion, and conscience that the First Amendment guarantees for every citizen. I mean, is that overstating the challenge here?
No, it's blurring the lines of what your sex is and your gender. I mean, it's completely blurring the lines. I mean, I gave examples in the committee of actually, you know, one of the Democrats said that, oh, this is just hypothetical. And I came back to her and I said, well, I talked about this. You obviously didn't hear me. Let me give you a couple examples. CC Telfer, a biological male who won 3 titles in the Northeast 10 championships for women's track and received the Most Outstanding Track Athlete Award. Fallon Fox, a biological male who shattered female fighter Tamika Brent's eye socket and gave her a concussion, and Brent said she has never felt so overpowered in her life. Gabriel Ludwig, a 50-year-old, 6'8", 230-pound biological male, who led the Mission College women's basketball team to a national championship with the most rebounds. And there was another example this past yesterday. One of the staffers handed me an example yesterday of a weightlifting event where it was a biological man who shattered the women that were competing, and one of the women that competed were quoted as saying, this is unfair. We are competing against a biological male who obviously, and there's tons of facts and science to back this up, are physically stronger than females.
And this affects a lot of people in terms of scholarships and where they're
going
to college. So, I mean, this is a far-reaching, but it's hard to carve out these one particular areas when you start playing with this whole issue of the redefinition of biology and gender. There's really no stopping it.
Yeah, when you blur the lines as to what a woman is and what a man is, and when there's no now real lines as to who can and cannot compete in a female event, then you're going to have these challenges.
Yeah, I think I could have been really good in women's volleyball. But anyway, Congressman Stube, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you stepping off the floor to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care. Greg Stube of Florida. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, good news out of North Carolina. The governor there vetoing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, only to be overridden by the state Senate. Include a bipartisan override, by the way. We talk with one of the bill's key sponsors next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Grandpa. Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. In a vote of 30 to 20 last night, the North Carolina Senate overrode Democratic Governor Roy Cooper's veto of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Significant. It was a bipartisan override. My next guest is North Carolina Senator Joyce Krawczyk, one of the primary sponsors of the bill. Senator Krawczyk, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Well, first, let me just say that I know the thoughts and prayers of a lot of our listeners are for the folks in North Carolina where there was the campus shooting there in Charlotte yesterday, killing two people and injuring others.
Yeah.
And those things are tragic. It's a reflection of the lack, I believe, of the respect for human life. And that's why I think what you're doing is so important, because I think it begins at the very beginning, at the origins of life. And if we can't respect the most vulnerable among us, and I can't think of anybody more vulnerable than a baby who survives an attempt on their life through abortion and is born alive, I cannot think of anyone more vulnerable that we should protect. And that's exactly what you're doing with this bill. And so I commend you on your efforts, but I congratulate you on the success last night in overriding the governor's veto.
Thank you, Tony. We were happy to get it done, and we didn't know until the vote took place if it was going to happen. But it was lots of people were praying. We had mountains of phone calls. In fact, my legislative assistant and I were just going through the calls and the emails that we've had the last few days, and it's just been amazing what our Christian community and our pro-life groups have done in contacting their legislators and letting them know where they stand on this issue. And we had one very brave Democrat. Originally, on the vote to pass the bill, we had two Democrats who voted with us, but on the override, only one of them was with us. But it was enough with the folks that were present. It was enough. We have to have 30. And it was exactly what we needed, and it was a joyous occasion, I will say.
That was the Democratic senator was Don Davis of Greene County, I believe, and I do commend him for, you know, going against his party, because the Democratic Party seems to be all in for
and
this.
And they have attacked him all day today. It has been vicious. So I hope that your listeners will continue to pray for him. he has been under a tremendous assault. And it boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind, the arguments that we heard, and we had the reasons why the governor stated that he was vetoing the bill, and then the reasons that his party was sticking with him in the Senate. There were just vacuous arguments. We had addressed every one of them, that there is no law in North Carolina that protects those babies. And the governor kept insisting that we didn't need it, that those babies were already protected, where our nonpartisan legislative staff, who is the best in the country, I think, publicly stated, no, we don't have a law to protect those babies. So it was very disingenuous argument, very dishonest. So I'm very happy that we were able to get it passed, and I'm hoping the House can do the same.
So, Joyce, what has the governor said since his veto has been overridden?
He said it was a sad day or something to that effect last night, I think. But I haven't looked at any news today. We had a strike by the teachers here at the Capitol. So we had tens of thousands of teachers here, and we had committee meetings all day, and we were just swamped. So I haven't even looked at news today. So I did see some things early this morning where some of my Senate colleagues on the Democrat side were attacking their colleague, Senator Davis, just viciously, some of his own party. And that was very disheartening for me.
So, Senator, it's now up to the House. When will the House take up the veto override?
Well, the House had four Democrats vote with them originally, but they need more. Over there, it was 65-45, but I think there were three Republicans out. There was one Republican who took a walk, as we call it, who didn't vote. And then four Democrats voted with them, but they were still short. It was 65-47, and they need 72 to override a veto. But the House's rules are different than ours. We have to give notice in the Senate. Our rules require that we give notice to both parties, to the opposing party, 24 hours in advance that we're going to vote on an override. The House doesn't have to do that. So they can just let that bill lay until we come back and just call it up. When they have Democrats that are absent one day, if enough of them are gone, they can call the bill up and vote it. So the Democrats will certainly be trying to make sure they have enough members there to keep that from happening every day, and the Republicans will be counting heads every day. But they have plenty of time. It'll go over through short session next year. So, they have a year and a half, really, to get it passed before it dies.
So are you pretty optimistic that the House might accomplish that?
I am. A lot of people are not, because it's a much bigger hill to climb. But I think they will get it done. I'm confident. I mean, God is good, and he has moved some big mountains over on our side, and I know he can do the same over there. So I'm confident that they'll be able to get it done.
All right. Well, we'll certainly encourage our listeners in North Carolina to weigh in with their House members. Joyce Kravick, thank you so much for joining us today. And again, congratulations, and appreciate your leadership.
Thank you so much, Tony. And thank you to your readers. Thank you. I mean, your listeners. Thank you.
All right. Hey, folks, don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
paid for by Family Research Council.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, we're going to go to the phones here, and this is what I want to talk about. I'm going back to the topic I was discussing with Congressman Greg Stube of Florida, and that is the Equality Act, or the Not-So-Equality Act. And the one aspect, it affects so many different things. I mean, we were talking about the sporting aspect of it, but it goes way beyond that. Monica Burke of the Heritage Foundation explains that the Equality Act would be used to compel speech. And this is how, and there's a case, a specific case, and this is like what Greg was saying, citing examples. These are not hypotheticals. It's not as, well, if A happens, then B. No, these are things that actually have happened. There was a teacher, a Virginia high school teacher named Peter Vlaming. He lost his job for refusing to use masculine pronouns to refer to a female student who pretends to be a boy. Now, the school is still considered it a violation of the anti-discrimination policy, and that's what would be mandated under the Equality Act. Affects schools, affects businesses, and ultimately homes. Because all of this stuff finds its way, you know, back into all aspects of policy, including the way parents raise their children. I mean, in fact, it already has. I guess I shouldn't say it would. It already has. There was a case in, this jeopardizes parental rights. There was in the recent issue of the American Journal of Bioethics, it includes an argument arguing that the state should overrule the parents of transgender children who do not consent to give them puberty-blocking drugs. And as I mentioned, this has already happened. In Ohio, a judge removed a biological girl from her parents' custody after they declined to help her transition to male with testosterone supplements. What they did is they terminated the parents' custody of their own children, and they gave the girl to the grandparents who were supportive of her going through this transition. I mean, I want you to think about that. That's something. I mean, this is like, there's a couple of things, and I go back to my days as a lawmaker. Property rights is one of the things that very guarded about of taking away people's property, you know, expropriation, where you actually take and you take people's property for public projects. It's an extensive process because we protect private property. Well, the other area that's kind of sacred is that of the relationship between a parent and child. And you don't easily sever parental rights, taking custody of children away from their parents. This is an area. This will expand that. And it'll, as we talked about earlier, trample on religious freedom. But the one point that Congressman Stubbe brought up was that of athletics. I want to ask you this. What do you think about this? If Congress passes this legislation, it would mandate public and religious schools to allow biological males who identify as transgender to compete in women's sports. Do you think that's fair? Do you think men who claim that they're transgender should be able to compete in women's sports? What does that do to the future of sports? What does it do to the future of mankind? 866-372-7234. Do you want to see that happen or not? 866-372-7234, the number to call to weigh in on this conversation of the Equality Act, which was in a hearing today. This is H.R. 5. The top 10 bills are reserved for the majority's priorities. This is number 5. This is one of Nancy Pelosi's priorities, and it's probably going to pass the House unless you step in and do something. I was talking with Senator McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate yesterday, in a meeting, and saying that, you know, basically the Senate is the conservative backstop to all this crazy stuff coming out of the House. Doesn't give me a lot of confidence, a lot of security, given some of the weak sisters we've got in the Senate. But do you think that's fair? Do you think that males should be able to say, you know what, I'm transgender, and be able to compete in women's sports? 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation. Also, I want to remind you, this is the National Day of Prayer this week. It's Thursday. National Day of Prayer will be taking place. That is tomorrow. And so I would encourage you to find out where one of the events are near you and participate in that. I will be, I'll be at the White House tonight for a dinner, the National Day of Prayer, then tomorrow at the White House for the actual ceremony. And then there'll be another ceremony on Capitol Hill at the Capitol in Statuary Hall tomorrow night, which will be webcasted, and I'm sure we'll get that link up. I'll be participating in that, one of the individuals praying in that event tomorrow night. There are local events, thousands of events, at state capitals, city halls, churches, and you can find all of that at the National Day of Prayer website. They have a listing of all of the events, so just you can Google that, go on the web and look for National Day of Prayer, ndp.org, and attend one of those. If there was ever a time we needed prayer. In fact, I had a group of pastors in town yesterday and today, and I was taking them around to pray with different members of the cabinet just to encourage them and strengthen them in the call that's upon their lives, and to stand firm in the times in which we find ourselves. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Eric in Missouri. Eric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I just wanted to say that, this isn't a good thing. Anytime anybody can step in and take somebody's children away from them for anything other than real abuse, I mean, I don't see how they can call this abuse. But, you know, it seems to me, you know, I was talking to some Democrats, and they don't quite understand, you know, exactly what socialism means. You know, to me, that's socialism. Whenever, you know, somebody can come in and take your children from you because you choose to raise them differently than what the government thinks you should raise them, and it's not legitimate abuse, then, you know, this is more of a...
I don't think it's... I think it's beyond socialism. I think it's tyranny. When you have a government that says they know better how to raise your children than you do because you are raising them according to your biblical values, according to not your values, but according to biblical values, and they say that's not acceptable in our society any longer. That, my friend, is tyranny.
Sure. You know, and them going into churches and, you know, and it's leading, you know, up to that Obama was doing it, going into churches and telling pastors that they have to marry, you know, people that they wouldn't ordinarily marry because it's not right, you know, and their way of thinking, you know. And when you can walk in and, you know, take faith from somebody who, out of their lives, when we have it in our, you know, Bill of Rights that we have a right to choose our faith and live it how we want to. But you don't see them imposing these things on the Muslims.
Well, I don't know how far this will go. I mean, certainly they're treading lightly on that. But this is where the left is in a conundrum, because as they find themselves increasingly on a string as puppets of the LGBT community, there's going to be these clashes because most Orthodox faiths still hold to the view that man and woman were created, and there's two sexes, two genders. And so there's going to be a conflict coming on the left over this. But, Eric, you're absolutely right. This is an example where we go with not just socialism. Of course, that's a step in it. That's a process as government takes on more and more and using its power to enforce the view of those who have control of the levers. And that's exactly what we see with what's happening on this. So, Eric, thanks so much for calling. Let me just say this. Here's two things you can do. Number one. Call your member of Congress. This is going to be up for a vote in the House soon. Now, this is a markup today. It's probably, I don't know, within the next month, maybe sooner than that. We don't have as much, we're not given as much information anymore with Nancy Pelosi in control, so we don't necessarily know when these bills are coming up for a vote like we used to. But let me give you a Capitol switchboard number where you can call your member of Congress, 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121, and weigh in with them on the Equality Act. Ask them where they stand. And look, by the way, this is not just Democrats. You need to weigh in with Republicans too, because many of them, you know, are afraid. A lot of this comes with how vocal and vicious the LGBT community is in beating people up, and how the media facilitates a false narrative, spreading things that are not true. So make sure you call your member of Congress, 202-224-3121. And then also, second action item is to call the White House. All right, now, I can't say that I have not talked to him about this. I probably see him tonight, but I don't know exactly where he stands. I'm sure if he looks at this, he would not be for it. But a lot of this depends on advisors around him, and I don't take anything for granted in this world, the political world of D.C. So you need to call the White House as well and say, look, stop this, because he's the last, very last line of defense. I don't have great confidence in the Senate, honestly, not because of of Mitch McConnell, but because of so many weak sisters there in the Senate when it comes to the Republicans. So the president is the very last line, and he needs to know. In fact, I heard this from some people in the White House that they need to know where you stand on this. So let me give you that phone number. The White House comment line is 202-456-1111. That's 202-456-1111. And weigh them, you know, call, and they just, you're able to leave your message there. But that's important that they hear from you on that as well. Okay, that's your two action items. Let's go to Jamie in North Carolina. Jamie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for welcoming me. Mr. Tony, I would like to just comment on the transgender bit you did mention a few moments ago.
Yes.
I would like to say that instead of these people complaining and bickering about how these guys, they don't want to play in the girl sports, why don't they just start their own legislation and say, I want to play in the younger, and I can get my trophy too. You know, instead of just bickering and complaining, oh, how they're doing this, why don't they just start going into the younger guys? You see? Do you see where I'm heading with this, sir?
No, explain a little bit for me.
Instead of bickering and complaining how the guys are going into the girls' sports, respected sports, and winning all the tournaments and trophies and whatnot, why don't mm-hmm. they start their own legislation and saying we're going to go into the junior league and we're going to conquer their sport?
And I shake up
the system.
Yeah, I see where you're saying. You know, we could say as a high schoolers could say, you know what, I feel like a junior high. I mean, if you can make everything up that you want to make it up. I mean, look, I should be able to hang out a shingle tomorrow and say I'm a brain surgeon, and start doing brain surgery. I've got as much of a basis to do that as what we see happening today when it comes to some of the gender issues. I'm pretty good with a knife. All right, let's go to Michael in Virginia. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you today? I'm glad. Appreciate you taking my call. Really appreciate all that you do. I'm the president of a Christian ministry. We do athletic training and have a high school program, boys and girls. I've been discussing this issue with my girls' program for quite a while about the establishment of, you know, men claiming to be women to play and taking their scholarships. I've been fortunate enough to send a lot of kids off to play college basketball, and it's definitely something that could impact them, and they're very upset about it. My question to you, though, is can the president establish an executive order that establishes what a man is, what a woman is? You know, because I know they were going to do something in Title IX that was going to establish that, but I haven't heard anything else about it. So where does all that stand?
Yeah, very good question, Michael. And I'm going to answer that very quickly because we're just about out of time. The Department of Justice, for their purposes, has defined, according to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, what sex is. That's what they've been able to do. Congress has passed that. Of course, at the time, that's what sex was, and that's what this administration has gone back to, unlike what the previous administration did. But the president can't go beyond that with the executive order. Executive order is limited. It's only for certain things, and most of it applies only to the federal government. So this is one, I think the president would veto this if it got to his desk, but we don't need it to go that far. And I don't want to rely on that. We need to kill it in the House. If not there, stop it in the Senate. But you need to weigh in now. All right, folks, sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls. Out of time. I hope you'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.